This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. And welcome to Radioactive Theater, presenting quality dramas, mysteries, and comedies from or reminiscent of the golden age of radio. This program presents two famous private detectives of the 1940s and 50s. The first is an episode from the Frank Sinatra show, Rocky Fortune. It was a short-run series with the lead character who goes by the name of Rocky Fortune, but whose real name is Rocky Fortunato. Rocky's always ready with a wise remark and seems to be a magnet for trouble. Too Many Husbands features Tom Hurley as Rocky Fortune, with a supporting cast including Holly Miller, Leo Frappier, Jeff Van Amberg, and Peter Welsh.
Hi. You know, there's an old saying, never look a gift horse in the mouth. With tongue in cheek, I now write a new saying, never look a gift blonde in the eyes. She was blonde because her hair told me so. That was the only proof I had. She didn't walk, she insinuated. She was from New Orleans and her name was Lou. And believe me, brother, Lou was no lady. When I saw her, I said to myself, I dig this babe. She almost dug me too. Right into a grave.
Now don't tell me an interesting-looking man like you spends much time in an unemployment compensation line.
So I won't tell you. You call the shots, baby. I'm awful easy to get along with.
You know, I nearly believe that. I hate to see a capable-looking man like you stand in a place like this.
I know what you mean, honey. The name's Rocky Fortune. It's not only a name, it's a description. As fortunes go, I got the rockiest. Last week was pretty bad in the money book, so this week finds me in the line.
I bet you're not too easy to keep in line.
You keep up with that southern syrup, and I'm liable to wind up making like a pancake.
Buy you a cup of coffee.
Make mine straight. You got all the sugar I need. Warmed by the steaming brew and blonde, I thought I'd better start moving in some direction, so I took the direct route. You must have something else in your mind besides what I hope. Why don't you spill, honey?
I love a direct man. Why don't you tell me something about yourself?
Well, I'm not exactly ready to publish the story of my life. Not until I know what rights I can hang on to. Tell my fortune first.
Myself? I think you're about to come into some real money.
I like you, Gypsy. Keep reading those coffee grounds.
I noticed you never mind sticking your neck out just a little bit if there's money involved.
That could be the story of my life, yes.
And you also have an unfortunate habit of getting yourself involved. And sometimes you get hurt.
Keep reading me.
Well, I've got me a little plan where you get just a little bit involved, where you can't possibly get hurt, and where you make yourself some $5,000.
Honey, my ears ain't wagging because of the money. I'm just fanning my face to keep a cool expression. Now give.
All you have to do is one teeny-weeny little thing for a little old me.
Well, I'll make book I won't like it, but tell me anyway.
But, honey, you'll make $5,000. It's such nice money.
And just what does little old me have to do for little old you to make that little old $5,000?
Kill my little old husband.
She poured on her message of murder.
So you see, honey lamb, it really is most embarrassing for me to be in this predicament, but there's one thing I got too much of.
Yeah, it's tough to believe. From where I sit, the distribution looks great.
Aw, I just love hearing you say things like that. I just love it.
Yeah. Let's get back to the excess. You said you got too much of something?
Oh, yeah. It's just too bad, but it can't be helped. I just have too many husbands.
Too many what?
Isn't that silly?
It's perfectly ridiculous. I thought I just heard you say you got too many husbands. I must have misread my ears.
No, you heard me right, honey.
But that's illegal.
I know. That's why it's so silly. It's all the law's fault.
Yeah, I'll make book on it. What's the story?
Well, they weren't ever supposed to let Marvin out of prison, and now they have.
So it's an ex-con you want me to bump?
Oh, no, Marvin hasn't any dirty old money. It's Perry I gotta get rid of.
Who's Perry?
My husband.
Who's Marvin?
My husband.
You lost me someplace, honey. Let me tell it to myself as I now understand you, which I probably don't. You have two husbands, Marvin and Perry, both alive and both kicking.
Well, Marvin's kicking because of Perry, but Perry ain't kicking because he don't know about Marvin.
Lady, right now I don't know about you. You don't seem right to me. You just don't seem right. I was getting on towards evening when I made like a homing pigeon. The wheels in my head were whirling. My first thought was to invest in a call to the Gestapo headquarters to ask my pal Sergeant Finger to run a make on the blonde. I tossed out that bright idea. If that ditzy dame was pulling my socks, Finger would never get off my back about it. I had a short session with the idea of going to the husband and informing him of the facts of life. Southern Fried had given me a real fancy engraved card with his address so I knew where to find him. But that notion hit the trash, too. If she was kidding, I'm a real patsy. By the time I reached my pad and opened the door, I decided to forget my ditzy blonde dreamboat and find myself another playmate for the evening. I reached for the light switch when something hit me. That something that hit me was more than an idea. It was more blackjack style. Before I knew what had happened, I was sailing away to Dreamboat Bay, happy with my life as an ice cream soda. The awakening came like a whoosh of cold water on the puss, which it was. Somebody tossed me a lifesaver. I'm drowning.
I'm awfully sorry I have to do this to you, Mr. Fortune, but it really was necessary.
Stop bleeding about it. I might get upset. Who are you?
I'll tell you who I am after I tell you how important it is that you stay away from my honey pear.
Your what?
My honey pear. Now, you should not be messing around with Lulu Ann.
Lulu Ann? Oh, yeah. The lights are on. I'm singing. Could you be Marvin?
I sure am, Mr. Fortune.
What's the story? Who belted me on the head?
I did, but I'm awfully sorry.
Yeah, don't drown in your tears. Now, look, if you want to wrestle, Buster, just give me a chance to move in.
Careful now, Mr. Fortune. This here gun is sure enough loaded with real bullets. It would hurt me to have to kill you.
Yeah, I get the message. I don't feel so good about that myself. So let's talk. Why massage my skull with a load of leather?
Well, I just had to convince you that you should stay away from my honey pear. I just know she's real gone for you.
Get ready to receive news, Buster, because I'm sending it right now. I ain't interested in your honey pear. I think she's got a screw loose.
That don't make no difference. She's interested in you.
Sure. She's interested in me. She wants me to do a job for her.
What kind of job?
She wants me to bump husband number two. She offered me $5,000 to bump Perry.
$5,000 to bump Perry? Oh, I see it all now. Isn't that downright sweet of her?
If you see anything, turn some lights on for me. It's awful dark where I'm sitting.
Why, don't you see? She knows I'd be perfectly willing to bump Perry if she asked me to. She just don't want me to get into trouble. You know, That really touches me.
Yeah, in the head, pal. I think you're both touched. Now listen close to some words I'm going to read. I want no part of your honey pear or her $5,000. I want no part of you. And if I ever catch you without a loaded heater in your mitts, I'm going to play Scrabble with your head. Now scram!
Now, it hurts me to have to be unfriendly. It hurts me real bad. But I still got something to say to you, Mr. Fortune. Stay away from my honey pear, no matter how close she wants to get. And don't you worry about taking care of Mr. Perry. I'll see he gets taken care of nice and proper right now.
First thought was to tip off Sergeant Finger and give him the rundown on Screw Loose Con and the Too Much Married Blonde. Second thought was that by the time I convinced him this comedy of murder was for real, little old Marvin would have drilled a little old hole right in little old Perry's head. Thinking back on the running order, the only thing that convinced me the whole bit was for real was the lump on my skull. Everything else could have been a gag, but that wasn't. Next item should be to make a fast trip to the apartment of Mr. and Mrs. Perry Shane. I made the item. Even the buzzer I pushed in this swank layout looks solid gold.
Yes?
Mr. Perry Shane?
That's right.
I gotta talk to you, Mr. Shane. We'd better talk fast.
I don't understand.
You will. Just get in out of that doorway and close the door.
Now, wait a minute. I don't like being pushed around in my own home. Who are you?
Rocky Fortune's the name. Sorry about the shove, but I had to. Look, I'll give it to you straight. Somebody's trying to kill you.
Someone wants to kill me?
That's right. An ex-con by the name of Marvin's looking for you right now.
Well, why does he want to kill me? Did I ever send him up?
That I don't know. I didn't even know you were a mouthpiece. Incidentally, is your wife home?
No, she hasn't been home all day. Do you know my wife?
If that's her picture sitting there on the mantle, I know your wife. Your wife, incidentally, is the reason Marvin wants to kill you.
Before I ask you to leave, would you mind elaborating on this fantastic story of yours?
Yeah, well, I guess I'm giving it to you pretty fast at that. The picture ain't very pretty, though, so I don't feel bad. Believe me, mister, your Southern Belle is ringing out nothing but bad news for you. She wants you dead.
I don't know what this is all about, but right now I'm not interested. I don't know who you are or what your plan is, but will you please leave before I call the police?
Look, mister, believe me, I know she wants you dead because she offered me $5,000 to kill you.
Get out. Get out now.
I'd hate to have to belt you, so if I do, it's for your own protection. You'd better keep your hands down, Mr. Shane.
No one makes accusations like that against my wife.
Now, take it easy, Mr. Shane. Real easy now. You're going to push me too far.
Get out of my house.
Now sit down in that chair and behave yourself. I'm getting a little tired of being shoved around. I'm the patsy in this deal, and I ask for nothing. Now listen to what I have to say. First of all, how long have you been married?
That's none of your business.
So it's none of my business. This bump in my noggin was none of my business either before I got it. Your wife's husband is the character who gave it to me.
My wife's husband? Are you insane?
I don't blame you for asking, pal. I doubted it myself for a couple of minutes. Whether you believe it or not, your wife has another husband, an ex-con by the name of Marvin.
You mean her ex-husband. I know she's been married before.
I mean her present husband. He was supposed to be a lifer, so she never bothered to get a divorce. But the law crossed her by letting him out.
Now, wait a minute. If all this is true, and frankly, I believe none of it, what is your interest?
Your wife put the make on me for a couple of weeks. She decided I was the kind of guy she wanted for a particular job. She offered me $5,000 to knock you off.
Sounds like a handsome offer. What's stopping you?
Couple of things. First, the law. It's real illegal, you know. Second, you'd be real dead if I did.
And those two items are stopping you from earning a $5,000 fee?
What do you think?
You seem like a particularly bright but, rough young man. If you're passing up that offer, it's only because you want more from me.
That flatters me not, pal, but we'll overlook it. At least it shows you're thinking maybe Dreamboat did make that offer.
I see. Would you suggest I call the police and tell them a complete stranger has informed me I'm about to be killed and please send over a police escort?
I'm giving you credit, so please extend the same in my direction.
Well, what would you suggest?
I'll make one call to the Irish Clubhouse.
The what?
Sorry, pal. Lost my head. Irish Clubhouse. Happens to be the local police headquarters. Sergeant Hamilton J. Finger's my boy there. I'll call him, get him to give you the rundown on me, and then we'll both go over to the headquarters.
Well, there's the phone.
Let's hope for your sake that Finger is at hand. Sergeant Finger. Strangers in the night, exchanging glances.
Don't tell me. Let me guess. Frank Sinatra?
Oh, yeah. You're a funny man, Finger. I'm going to put an attorney on by the name of Mr. Shane. I happen to know he's got an ex-con gunning for him. Will you tell him I don't make jokes about things like this?
Wait a minute. Don't put anybody else on. Who's gunning for who?
Sorry, pal. I got a deadline. I gotta get this guy over to the protection of your slack house before his own line goes dead from a bullet. So talk to the man.
This is Perry Shane speaking.
I don't know what this is all about yet, Mr. Shane. But if Rocky says your life is in danger, we better get over there right away.
Now, just a minute, Sergeant. Since I actually don't know this man and I don't know you, perhaps we'd both better come over to the precinct. We'll be right over.
And away we went. Out the door of the plushed pad, down the gilded shaft the lift in, and out under the tilted nose of the snooty doorman. Lawyer Shane's car was parked in the front of the apartment. It was long, black, and shiny. Could have easily been a convertible. Convertible into a hearse. We made towards the car. Shane opened the door and started to get in. He moved toward the driver's seat, but I saw it coming up and shoved him to the ground. Hit the ground!
What happened?
Take a peek at that neat hole in your windshield and you won't need any other diagrams. Now get behind the wheel and fast and let's get out of here.
Is it safe?
Yeah, he's real gone by now.
Did you see who it was?
Yeah, but just pull over right here at the curb. Pull up right here somewhere. It was little old Lou's little old husband. That was Marvin. Who else would be jerky enough to try a shot like that?
The hole in the windshield. It's right where I would have been sitting if you hadn't pulled me down.
Save the drama till we got time for it. We got things to do.
But aren't we going right over to the police headquarters?
You're going right over to Sergeant Finger, 25th Precinct. Now give me your apartment keys. I gotta move fast. Now I'm going right back to your apartment. You go over to the precinct and bring Finger back on the double.
Well, what are you going to do?
The $64 questions come later. Now move. The move's going to be fast. Rube Goldberg stuck a bulb over my head and an idea lit up. The next move would be back to the plush pad, and I want to be there to see it. I no sooner got the door open when magnolia blossoms hit my eardrums.
Oh, Rocky, I'm so happy it's little old you.
I'll just bet you're no end pleased.
I saw the whole thing right out this window. I was just horrified.
Why? I thought you wanted him bumped.
Well, I do, but I didn't want you bumped. Oh, I couldn't stand it if anything happened to you.
Lady, you kill me.
Now, Rocky, you got way too much talent.
Let's write some story now, Lady Lou. Were you camping out in the other room while I was talking to Perry?
No, of course not. Well, I was just completing my little plan with Marvin. You see, I'm afraid I had a change of heart. I realized I'd still have Marvin as a husband even with Perry out of the way. That wouldn't do at all.
Why not? Marvin was the banana you picked in the first place.
Oh, but I got different ideas now. I want me another husband. I got him all picked out.
Say, you are the one. Your little plan was just screwball enough to work, too. You know, this crazy Marvin's gone enough on you to do anything you want. He kills Perry for you, and you, the about-to-become black satin widow, testify you saw Marvin kill Perry.
And the law kills Marvin because he was wicked and murdered Perry. And that leaves me minus two husbands.
And plus Perry's loot.
And plus one husband number three.
And him you already picked out?
Not him. You.
Me? I'm too young to die.
Oh, you're not gonna die, Rocky. Together, we're gonna live.
I'm so sorry for you, Mr. Fortune, that Luluan picked you out. You know, I'm just downright sorry.
I'll buy that. You're the sorriest sight I ever saw. I hope you got my last message.
You mean about being too young to die? I received the message, but I'm afraid I gotta disagree.
Figures. That 38 you're packing looks mighty disagreeable. Where from the woodwork were you hiding?
Now, I just don't understand your Yankee talk. If you mean how come I come back here after shooting at a missing Mr. Perry, why, I just had to come back to find out what Lulu Ann wanted me to do next.
Oh, Marvin, honey, that's real thoughtful of you. I'm just going to give you a nice, big kiss.
I hate not being a gentleman, Lulu Ann, but I think maybe you better stay over there with Rocky.
Why, Marvin?
I'm hurt, Lulu Ann. I'm real hurt. If I hadn't heard it from your own sweet lips, I'd never believed it. I heard the whole plan you told Rocky. You wanted me dead, and that goes against my grain.
Oh, but Marvin, baby, I was only telling Rocky that so I could stall him and keep him from calling the police. Now you just go right ahead and shoot Rocky while I throw a few things in a bag.
Come on, Marvin. You're not going to let Slick Chick pull the black satin over your eyes like that. Get with it, man. Get with it.
Now don't you go putting any of your Yankee ideas in Marvin's crowded little head. You go right ahead and shoot him, Marvin.
Sure, go ahead and shoot me, Marvin. The cops will be here in a minute. You'll burn for killing me, and little old Lulu Wen will be left with her little old money bags Perry.
Now don't you be telling him things like that. Now I'll just turn on the radio nice and loud so the shooting won't disturb the neighbors.
Don't you see, Marvin? She's got to get rid of you so she can be legally married to Perry.
Don't you believe a word he says. Go ahead and shoot him while the music's loud.
Turn off the radio, Marvin, and listen to me.
You like it louder?
You got to be dead, or she's not legally married to Perry. She can't get his money while you're still alive.
We'll find a way to get his money, Marvin, and we'll do it together.
Now, wait a minute. My head just won't stand all this shouting and loud music. I think you're trying to confuse me, Mr. Fortune. Now get ready to leave, Lulu Ann. I'm going to shoot him. I'm just so surprised.
Huh. He was surprised. Think how I felt. Here I am staring at a 38 caliber lead purveyor, and I hear the hammer click and the gunshot. I wait for the hot lead, and instead of a rainbow explosion in the puss, I see the guy with the gun fall. The explanation came from a welcome source. My pal, Sergeant Finger.
Someday, Rocky, that luck of yours is gonna run out. Why didn't you come down to the precinct with Mr. Shane?
For the reasons which I hope you heard. Namely, the story as told by Honey Pear and Marvin. Did you get it all?
Did I get it all? The way you were all yelling, we could have taken that story down at the precinct. Come on, Honey Pear. We're going downtown.
I refuse to move. You're just going to have to talk to my husband. He's a lawyer.
Your ex-lawyer, Lulu Ann, and your soon-to-be ex-husband. I'll start annulment proceedings tomorrow.
You can't annul me. Marvin's dead, and he was the only other husband I ever had.
Correction, sweet dreams. Marvin got his hand blasted, not his head. He'll be okay in a week. I can see you both now walking arm in arm to your little steel cottage overlooking the Hudson River. In fact, if you're real sweet, I'll talk to Sergeant Finger about getting you a room with a southern exposure. That's so you'll feel right at home. It's a nice feeling, Mr. Shane, having a lively, expensive dinner after looking at some deadly lead.
Well, we both have much to be thankful for, Rocky. Hey, you keep looking at me like you want to ask me something.
You hit the nail right on my head, Mr. Shane. My nose is right where it don't belong again. I mean, Honey Pear wasn't a smart chick. She was wild and screwy and about as subtle as Sophie Tucker. How come she got hooked up with a smart guy like you?
Oh, I was lonely and she was pretty. She was amusing and I happened to be a man. Need I say more?
You do, and you'll be talking too much. You look like you got something on your mind, too, Mr. Shane.
You hit the nail right on my head, too, Rocky. I was sort of thinking about you.
Well, you'll have to spill without the penny for your thoughts. I'm a little low in the loot department.
That's what I was thinking about. You see, I'm a very successful attorney. Frankly, I'm quite a wealthy man, and I can afford to have whomever I want around the office. Now, I know your source of income is rather unstable. How about a job?
Me? In a mouthpiece office wearing a white collar? No thanks. Not to this moose.
Well, process servers have no use for white collars, and they lead a pretty eventful life.
Process server, huh? Huh. Didn't think of that. An outside-type profession could be interesting and lucrative. I'll have to kick that around between the ears a bit.
Well, while you're kicking it around, I'd like to make out a check for you for a nice, sizable advance.
Tell you what, Mr. Shane. Me? I'm a realistic type. Make it out to my favorite charity.
Which is?
Cash, Mr. Shane. C-A-S-H. Cash.
Strangers in the night, exchanging glances, wandering in the night. What were the chances we'd be sharing love before the night was through? Something in your eyes.
The Adventures of Sam Spade was a radio series based loosely on the private detective character Sam Spade, created by Dashiell Hammett for The Maltese Falcon, starring Humphrey Bogart. The show ran for 200 episodes between 1946 and 1951. Its scriptwriters won an Edgar Award for Best Radio Drama from the Mystery Writers of America. The Blood Money Caper features Gary Galanik as Sam Spade, with supporting cast including Tim Elms, Julie Standrovich, Lorraine Mason, Peter Welsh, John Riccio, Peter Russo, Ellen Piccioli, and Jeff Raymond.
The Hair-Raising Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, brought to you by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the Hair.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Hello, sweetheart. It's me, Sammy the Spade.
Sam, is it over? Who was behind the Battle of Montgomery Street?
I'll tell you all about it when I get there. What a day. I even had a fight with a, I guess you'd call it a woman.
Why, everyone knows you can lick any woman your weight.
Yeah, not this one. Sharpen a couple of pencils, sweetheart. I'll be right over to dictate my report on the Blood Money Caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, The Hard-Boiled Private Eye. And William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with The Adventures of Sam Spade. Presented each Sunday by Wild Root Cream Oil, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that will put your hair back in place again, grooming it neatly, naturally, the way you want it. 4 out of 5 users in a nationwide test preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. You'll like it too. And now, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Oh, Sam, your eye. Did she hurt you?
Yeah, all of it. But there's a hole in my pants pocket. Come on, shake the lead out of your pencil.
Look what I got, Sam. It writes underwater.
For this report, you'll need one that writes under Humphrey Bogart. Put it on our best stationery. It's going to the president of the Golden Gate Trust Company. What's left of it, anyway. Ready?
I'm always ready, Sam.
Dear Mr. Newhall, you may consider this my final report. There's nothing more I can do or want to do. From here out, your daughter Anne is your problem. 2 weeks ago, you retained me to check on her movements. You suspected she was seeing a man known as Red O'Leary. You also said you feared he was a, quote, disreputable character. You are right on both counts. On the night of September 16, I picked up the subject, your daughter, at the Blue Bottle Bar and Grill. She and Mr. O'Leary were seated in a booth in the rear, punishing the phony scotch. I kept a plan on them, and during the next 10 days, they met regularly at the Blue Bottle. They never went anywhere else, just sat and talked. That is, Anne talked. Red listened. This routine continued until last night. I tailed them to a joint called Big Flora's on Telegraph Hill. I cooled my heels outside for a while, then went in after them. Big Flora's was a new gin mill on the hill. It had been going less than a month, but it was going strong. I drifted over to the bar and threw a fast case around the place. No local guns, strictly an out-of-state mob. O'Leary and your daughter were in a side booth. Big Flora herself pinned me with a look when I entered. She stood at least 5'10 in my stocking feet. Broad-shouldered, deep-bosomed, thick-armed, a pink accordion-pleated throat. A handsome, brutal face.
Just get into town, dearie? Or are you the local talent?
I'm from KC. That makes you happy.
KC, eh? Hobie?
Hobie Pushkin.
No, man. What's your name?
I got a dozen. You like Little Morphy?
Little Morphy's dead.
I know. I was with him in the busted caper that croaked him. He gave me his name before he died.
Well, if that's so, you must be a right guy. Shake.
Ow!
What's the matter, kid? You soft? Come on, this calls for one on the house. Out of my way, Papadopoulos. Big Flora's mixing these herself. This boy's from Kansas City. Meet my bartender, Papadopoulos.
Papa who?
Papadopoulos. Pleased to make your acquaintance.
Was there anyone here in particular you wanted to meet?
How about that gold-plated mouse over there?
Her? Uh-uh. That's Red O'Leary's property, Miss Anne Newhall. She came in here... slumming, I think they call it. Her and Red looked at each other, and daring, that was a look. Love, I think they call it.
Yes, to talk to her might encourage trouble.
You shut up!
Ow! Please, I did not mean anything. No, Flora, no, don't hit me again.
Stop shaking, Papadopoulos. I'm not mad at you. I'm not mad at anyone tonight.
I am so glad, Flora. It is so nice to see you happy.
Flora, I gotta see you. In private.
Sure. Take over, honey. I gotta talk to this boy. Come in the back room, Blue Point.
Yes, Flora, dear.
Why do you let her knock you around like that, Pop? Ain't you got a union?
What can I do?
Hey, who's the gun she took into the back room?
Some gangster, I think. Dance is his name. Blue Point Dance.
Quite a few guns here this evening. There's Patty the Mex. Haven't seen him since the days of the old beer mob. Fat Boy Clark. Cokey Harmon. That frizzy blonde dame is Angel Grace Cardigan, isn't it?
Believe me, everyone here is a criminal. They've been drifting in here ever since that Red O'Leary came to San Francisco.
A new mob. Red O'Leary the big gun.
Please, I know nothing of such matters.
Any idea what's the caper?
I have no idea.
Flora, no.
Flora don't know. She likes anybody that brings money into the place.
Smart gal, Flora.
Yes. I gotta wait on a customer. Excuse me.
I looked up. Big Flora was coming out of the back room with Blue Point Vance. They laughed about something. And he walked away. Then Flora went over and whispered to Ann Newhall. Looked a little frightened. Ann got up and followed her into the back room. Red gave her a reassuring smile as she disappeared through curtains. I went over to Red's table.
What do you want, Seamus?
Mind if I sit down?
Yeah, I mind, but it looks like you don't.
Red, why don't you leave the girl be? This isn't her crowd.
Look, Spade, I don't mind your tailing us. That's the way you make your living, but let's keep it formal, shall we?
Okay, Mr. O'Leary. Let's. Who's the boss gun of this mob?
Mob? What mob?
Don't be coy. There's not a face in this room that doesn't have a picture of it. Front, view, and profile, with a number under it.
Why are you telling me?
My job is to look after Ann Newhall.
Well, go ahead if you think she needs it.
She needs it. She's drinking too much, and it's beginning to show.
You're not a snob, are you, Sammy?
Why should a kid that's got everything throw it away for what you've got, which is nothing?
You sound like you wish she'd throw it away in your direction.
I do indeed. I do indeed.
Now, look, Sam, I've been walking the straight and ever since I left Chicago.
That what you told her?
That's what I told her, and that's what I'm telling you.
It couldn't be that you're rushing Ann Newhall because she knows her way around the Golden Gate Bank.
Use your head, Sammy. You couldn't blow the Golden Gate with the A-bombs.
Ann might know what day the time locks are sprung. Or she might find out from her daddy.
Use your head, Sammy. Montgomery Street is crawling with cops, bank guards, who can lay their hands on more heavy artillery in 30 seconds than this mob ever saw in their lives.
Guys have been crazy enough to try it.
Not this guy.
Good. Now, what about Ann Newhall?
What about Ann Newhall, Mr. Spade?
Oh, hello, Miss Newhall.
Sammy doesn't believe I've gone straight, Ann.
Why do you waste your time talking to a sneaky gumshoe like him anyway, Red?
I felt like talking to him. You got any objections?
Of course not, Red, darling. I just thought maybe you thought you had to be nice to him because he's working for Father.
He thinks he's working for you.
Well, he's not. Mr. Spade, I am sick and tired of being followed around. Red is very well qualified to protect me. And if you don't leave us alone, I'm going to ask him to protect me from you. Do I make myself clear?
Okay, sweetheart. I'll call your old man in the morning and tell him I'm through. And I'm going to tell him why I'm through.
Because Red threatened you, I suppose.
No, sweetheart, that's not why. The why is because you aren't worth protecting. I went home and tried to forget Ann Newhall. I did. Pretty nearly. But I couldn't shake the hunch I had about the mob in Big Flora's place. I kept thinking about them and about your bank, Mr. Newhall. Your bank and the bank that faced it across the street on Montgomery contained a good part of the cash money in the city of San Francisco. For a mob of cheap gunsels to knock over every one of those banks would be like splitting Gibraltar with a BB gun. But supposing the cops were really masterminded, 100 really tough guns might crack both of them at once. I'd counted 30 at Big Flora's alone, and they were still coming in when I left. It was a cute hunch, but wild. I decided to sleep on it. Next morning, I was reaching for the phone to call you. When it rang. Yes.
Mr. Spade, this is Taylor Newhall.
Yes, Mr. Newhall. I was just going to call you. About your daughter.
Yes, Mr. Spade. About my daughter. There's no point in your continuing on that job. I've decided that Mr. O'Leary is all right.
You feeling all right this morning, Mr. Newhall?
Yes, Mr. Spade. I've met O'Leary and...
Just a minute, Newhall. Mr. Newhall, where are you calling from? The bank?
No, I'm at home. I decided not to go into the bank today.
You're a lucky man, Mr. Newhall.
What do you mean by that?
I'm looking out the window toward Montgomery Street, Mr. Newhall, and I can barely see your bank for the gun smoke.
What's that? I can't hear you.
I can't hear myself. I'll call you back, Mr. Newhall. I couldn't see the bank building distinctly. But the block between Kearney and Montgomery told me enough. 10 police squad cars were piled up near the corner, and the cops had been mowed down as they crawled out of the wreckage. The bandits had started the caper by knocking over the garage where the banks kept their armored trucks, and they mowed down the law as fast as it could come in. A police grenade blew one of the trucks sky high, and the cops moved in another few yards. But the Gunzels had thrown up a barricade behind it and held their lines. Guns chattering, grenades exploding, sirens screaming, and the yells of the battling men. It was like the soundtrack of All Quiet on the Western Front. The Battle of Montgomery Street had begun.
The makers of Wild Goo Cream Oil are presenting Blood Money, an adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. In just 21 words, I can sum up for you the reason why more and more men are using Wild Goo Cream Oil all the time. Here they are. Mainly because Wild Goo Cream Oil has the advantages that men expect from a fine hair tonic, without the disadvantages they sometimes find. Yes, that's the gist of it. Now, what real man wants a tonic that plasters his hair and gives it a greasy look? Wild Goo Cream Oil never does that. It grooms your hair naturally, without a trace of that slick-down appearance. So get the big economy size at your drug or toilet goods counter, and next time you visit your barber, ask him to use Wild Goo Cream Oil on your hair. And now, back to Blood Money, tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
By 12 o'clock, the Battle of Montgomery Street was over. On the desk in my office, the afternoon paper screamed the news of the Siemens National and Golden Gate Trust double looting in five colors. The returns weren't all in yet, but the score stood at 16 coppers knocked off, three times that many wounded, and 12 innocent spectators, bank clerks and the like, killed. The bandits had lost seven known dead and 31 prisoners. The others, 100-odd, had made a clean getaway, using ordinary cars that were easily lost in traffic. I was reading the newspaper guesses as to the size of the loot. Around $10 million.
Sam, there's a man outside. I think he's been shot. There's blood all over the...
Stay in here. I'll see him in the outside office. What do you mean, coming in here? Messing up my carpets?
They jumped me. It started.
What started? You need a doctor.
You've got to listen to me, Spade. I don't think I've got much more time. I got five slugs in me. I'm Blue Point Vance.
Yeah. You're a pal of Big Flores. One of the mob that was in the Montgomery Street push. What else? He talked. The way he told it, the mob was split up into 10 groups. Each group had a leader. Each leader received a map and a detailed plan of his part of the operation. But none of them knew who made the plans. Each one took his orders from the group leader just ahead of him. Like a chain letter scheme. Blue Point was the top link in the chain. I asked him who was the Eisenhower.
Don't know. Every man's cut. $100,000. Every one of us knocked off. Up's the divvy for the others, see? That's what I mean. It started, see?
Yeah? Who'd you get your orders from? Come on, Blue Point, try. Who was it?
It was Red O'Leary.
Red, huh? I was afraid of that. Effie!
Yes, Sam? Dead?
Yeah. Call homicide. Tell him to get the boys up here with the basket. Take the rest of the day off.
Did he tell you anything?
Some, Effie. Some. Blue Point Vance said it had started. It had. They were dropping all day long. In alleys. Singly at first. Happy Jim Hacker and Ratface. And then in twos and threes. And finally, two dozen mowed down where they were lined up against a wall in a house on Fillmore Street. And for every mobster killed, there was a bigger chunk of blood money per man among the survivors. Around 6 in the evening, I walked up Telegraph Hill to Big Flora's. The neon sign was dark, curtains drawn tight over the windows, and a sign on the door said, closed for alterations. I climbed a flight of stairs to Big Flora's rooms over the saloon and pounded on the door.
Well?
Wacky Washburn sent me.
Step inside. We'll talk in here. The parlor's in use.
So it's you, Flora. Oh, I thought I heard the door. Oh, excuse me.
Ow!
I told you to keep your trap shut in front of our guests.
No, please, Flora. I will be good. Don't hit me again.
So you and Papadopoulos are at it again. He your husband?
Him? Does the little man love his big Flora?
No, Flora, please, not that.
What's the matter, honey? Don't you like to be hugged?
Yes, Flora, yes. But remember last time? My ribs. They had to take me up.
You should have heard him squeal when they pulled off the adhesive. Sit down, honey, before you fall down. You too.
Thanks.
All right. You talk. Who, what, and why?
I'm Percy McGuire, and I want my 150 grand.
Listen, Percy. You got a bill? You got to give it to the big gun.
I don't even know who he is.
That makes two of us.
But, Flora, that is not true. He is coming here this evening.
What was that you said, dearie?
Now, Flora, darling. Oh, no, Flora, no. I did not mean to say anything wrong. I swear I did not.
I'll kill you. So help me this time, I'll kill you.
That's enough of that.
Who says so?
I say so. Pick on someone your own size.
You look about my weight.
Better not, Flora. You might get hurt.
Defend yourself, man. Defend yourself.
Okay, sister. You asked for it. I got the worst of it from the beginning. She led with her right, like a woman. But what I didn't know was that she was a southpaw. I got in a couple where they should have counted, but where most women are soft. She had muscle. I was punchy before the round was over. And when somebody rang the doorbell, I was on the carpet. Saved by the bell.
Pardon me while I answer the door, Mr. McGuire. We'll finish this later. Oh, let me just take your gun. Getting old, out of condition. But we had fun, didn't we? Help him up, Papadopoulos. Get him some water.
You are all right? You were not badly hurt?
Jaw's not broken.
Stay close by me this evening. We will help each other against that she-devil.
That wouldn't be the big gun she's letting in now.
Yes, yes, it is time.
Step in here, kids. You know Papadopoulos, Mr. McGuire. Red O'Leary and Miss Newhall.
McGuire, huh?
Miss Flora, Red is badly hurt.
Hurt? Why didn't you say so? What happened, Red? They jump you?
A slug in my neck. Can't move my arm.
Red thought you might know of a doctor we could trust.
Only doc I know got knocked off with that bunch on Fillmore Street.
Let me have a look at that, Red.
You a doc, Mr. McGuire?
I don't think he'd last to the hospital. And through the questioning they'd give him there before they'd touch this.
No, no, don't say that.
And he's lost a lot of blood. But he's tough. The slug's stuck in the neck muscle. I can dig it out. You got any disinfectant in the house?
Nothing but a little bottle of iodine. But it's mostly dried up.
You. Listen carefully, Miss Newhall.
Yes.
Go down to the corner drugstore. Get some alcohol, swabs, iodine, cotton, gauze. The kind with the blue cross on it. If he doesn't have that kind, tell him to phone out for some.
I don't know why. She don't look right to me. I don't know if...
Shut up! Go out in the kitchen and boil some water. Get some towels and clean rags. Hurry up! I started digging the slug out of Red O'Leary's neck. It took about an hour. He was out most of the time. Then I put a bandage on it, using Flora's iodine for disinfectant. He was still running a fever when he got to his feet, wearing his lips in a grin. His right arm hung useless. He reached out with his left to pick up his shoulder holster, and the gun wasn't in it anymore. The other empty holster was mine.
Where's Flora?
I sent her out to boil some more water. Shall we talk?
Listen, there is no time to talk. I know that you sent that girl to phone the police, Mr. Spade. Yes, I also know you are Sam Spade.
Anne's no stool pigeon. She wouldn't rat on me.
She would if she thought it was the only way of saving your life. If she got what I was trying to tell her, that's what she thinks.
Why, you...
No, no, he is right, Mr. O'Leary. That she-devil would kill us all. Better the police. Spade, listen to me. Let me get out past police, and I will give you everything.
Go on out. Who's stopping you?
Look out the window. Plainclothesmen watching the door, waiting for a squad car. I am old. I'm sick. What have I to do with robberies? You have seen it here. I am a slave. I, who am near the end of my life. Abuse, cursing, beatings. And those are not enough. And now I must go to prison because of that she-devil. You will let me out. I will give you that she-devil. I will give you the money they stole.
How can I get you out?
How not? You are a friend of the police. You can take me out past your friends, the police. Do what I ask, and I will give you the monies. $10 million. Make no mistake. When that she-devil comes back into this room, you will die. Both of you. She will kill you, certainly.
Papadopoulos!
Sounds like it's too late.
Where are you, you old hound?
In here, Flora.
Where is that stool pigeon? Huh, there you are. Put the police on me, will you?
Oh, me? I tipped the police.
You were that dame that came here with Red. You're done, both of you. You hear me? Done.
No, wait. Wait, Flora. Not here like this, please. Don't give the police such evidence. Let me take them to the cellar.
Okay, but make it quick, dearie. Soon as that squad car gets here, they'll be pounding at the door. Call me when you're finished, and I'll help you haul them out of sight.
You will march ahead of me. If either one of you makes one move, I will shoot you. I am holding two guns on you.
Red and I walked ahead of Papadopoulos into the hall. I opened the door he indicated, switched on the basement light, and helped Red down the uneven flight of steps.
Listen to me. I will first show you the monies, then I will give you that she-devil. You will not forget your promise? I should go out through the police?
Sure, sure.
How about me?
You think Big Flora would let a rabbit like him change her plans?
So Big Flora was the boss? That's a laugh.
Now turn around, both of you. Here, take these.
What kind of joke is this supposed to be?
I give you these guns to show you I keep my promise. Now, quickly, follow me. I will show you where the monies are hidden.
I followed him and Red O'Leary to the end of a low passageway. Papadopoulos got low on his knees and started clawing at the wall like a rat. With trembling hands, he lifted out a section of loose bricks. And then we saw it. It was still in the boxes and bags, the way it came carried from the banks. He insisted on opening some of them to show me the money. Hundreds of bundles of green stacked in a metal-lined cell that was as dry and airless as the bank vault they'd lived in before.
That, as you see, is the money. Now for that she-devil. You will stand behind these boxes, hiding. When I bring her down the stairs, you will know what to do.
Yeah, Pappy, we'll know what to do.
He wasn't long in coming back. Flora came down the steps ahead of him. She had a gun in each hand. Her gray eyes were everywhere. Her head was down, like an animal's coming to a fight. Her nostrils quivered. Her body, coming down, not fast, not slow, was balanced like a dancer's. She was a beautiful, fight-bred animal.
Come out! Come out, or I'll come and get you!
Stay here, Spade. I want the first crack at the old witch.
Red! Come back here! You fool! Red! Ah! She dropped Red without moving a muscle that I could see. I guess the poor guy must have been a little feverish from his wound. Running out into the open like that, firing wildly with his wobbly left hand. I didn't feel heroic myself. I just aimed the best way I knew how from my ambush and squeezed the trigger.
You bungling idiot! You shot the wrong one. You shot the wrong one.
My aim had been bad. I'd aimed for his leg, but got him in the side. After that last scream, he didn't make any more noise. Then he didn't move anymore. Big Flora let the guns fall from her hands and knelt down beside his body.
Oh, what'd you do that for? I was the one with the gun on you. Why didn't you shoot me instead?
Yeah, I figured who he was when you let him bring me down here where the money was without squawking your head off.
He was the smartest, kindest man that ever lived.
Smart enough and kind enough to put about 300 people out of their misery. Listen, Flora, don't you know he gave us guns and brought us down here so we'd knock you off and he'd have all the loot to himself?
He wasn't much of a man for muscle, but he had brains, see? He was smarter than you or any copper that ever lived. You killed a great man. I hope you feel good about it.
Yeah, you and he were quite a team. Nobody would have suspected that the arch gun of the biggest mob in history was Big Flora's whipping boy.
I never wanted to bat him around like I had to. I never really hurt him. We used to laugh about it afterwards.
All right, down there. All your exits are covered. Come out with your hands clasped behind your necks. This is the police.
All right, all right. Keep your shirt on. Come on, let's get it over with. No use fighting anymore.
You really loved him, didn't you, Flora?
So what? Who are you to laugh at us?
Yeah, you're right, Flora. Who am I to laugh at you? After the cops had cleaned up at Big Flora's, I took your loving daughter home in a taxi, Mr. Newhall. See, itemized account enclosed. She was pretty broken up about Red O'Leary's death, but I think she'll recover. Please don't leave either your $10 million or your daughter lying around loose again, as the entire incident has caused me a great deal of trouble, and I will therefore have to charge you my regular fee of $25 a day and expenses, instead of the usual fee for tailing. Period. End of report.
Oh, Sam, I wish you'd just taken one little package of that money. They'd never have missed it.
Effie, I'm surprised at you. That wouldn't be ethical.
I don't know why you have to get ethical every time the installment is due on the office furniture.
Hey, what's this?
Oh, letter for you. It came this morning.
Why didn't you tell me? It's from the Golden Gate Trust. A reward for my services. Well, hurry up. Open it. Aha! A check.
It's a check, all right.
How much?
$3.83.
What's that for?
I don't know. It's made out to Big Flora's Bar and Grill, signed by you and stamped, returned for lack of funds.
How do you like that?
I'll get used to it, I suppose, in time. Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
Tune in next time for the hair-raising adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. Brought to you by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil and Radioactive Theater.
We hope you've enjoyed Radioactive Theater's production of Sam Spade and Rocky Fortune. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. This program was produced and directed by Catherine Thornton, Julie Standrovich, with sound and music by John McManaman. Tune in again next time for Radioactive Theater, a production of Audio Journal.